So far, we have studied one part of beings. Now, most beings are composed of mind and matter. I say most beings because there are some beings who have only mind, and there are some others who have only a physical body without mind. So we call them mindless beings. But most beings are composed of mind and matter. And we have studied up to now the mind, the one half of what we call beings. So we have understood that mind is divided into two parts, consciousness and mental factors. And there are 89 or 121 types of consciousness and 52 mental states, and how they come into combination and others. Now, today, we are going to study the other half of the being, that is rupa, matter or material properties. You may have heard of the expression nama-rupa. So nama-rupa is a popular expression in Buddhist books. Beings are just the combination of nama and rupa. So today we study rupa. And what is rupa? The definition of rupa is given in lecture 2. So if you have the notes with you, you may look at it, and if you don't have, I will just read the notes. So matter or rupa is defined as that which changes when coming into contact with adverse conditions such as cold, heat, hunger, thirst, bites of insects, and so on. So when it is cold, you have one series of material properties, and when cold disappears and it becomes hot, then you have another series of material properties. And so change here means just the appearance of a different series of material properties. That is what is called change here. And also change here means the obvious or discernible change, because mind changes more quickly than material properties or matter. So by the definition that which changes is called rupa, then all chetas and chetasikas would be called rupa, because they change more quickly than material properties. But here change means change which can be discerned, which is obvious. So rupa is the name for those which have this obvious or discernible change, but not undiscernible change like cheta and chetasika. So rupa is that which changes when it comes into contact with adverse conditions. When it is cold, there is one series of material properties, and when it is hot, there's another. And this matter or rupa exists in living beings and also in the outside world, in buildings, in trees, in mountains, on the earth, and so on. And it has no ability to cognize. So material properties have no ability of cognizing. They do not know, but they are just the material properties, which some of which are the seat or basis for the consciousness to arise. So some of the material properties serve as basis for consciousness to arise. but it itself has no ability to cognize. Now, there are 28 kinds of matter or material properties recognized in the Abhidhamma. So we are going through the list one by one, 28 material properties. And these 28 material properties are comparable to elements in chemistry. So according to chemistry, everything is built up of the different combinations of the elements. So in the same way, everything, including living beings, is built up of these 28 or some of the material properties. And first, the material properties are divided into two broad divisions. One is the primary elements, or sometimes they are called essentials. In Pali, they are called Mahabhuta, Mahabhuta. That means great elements or something like that. And the other division is dependent ones, those which depend on the primary elements or great essentials. So the first group consists of four primary elements, and they are the element of earth, water, fire, and air. Somebody told me that the teaching of these four elements is also found in Greek philosophy. So the teaching of the four elements is not new to the Western public. But I think in Buddhism, the teaching of elements is more refined. We'll see in a moment. But it is interesting to note that there is something like correspondence between Eastern thought and Western thought, although they are far apart in distance and in time and in culture. Now, the element of earth, water, fire, and air are the four primary or essential elements. They are the basis on which the other material properties depend. Now, what is the element of earth? It does not mean the earth, but it means the quality inherent in the earth. So that quality is what we call the element of earth. So when we say the element of earth, we do not necessarily mean the earth, only the earth, but the quality which is inherent in the earth. And what is that quality? Some say extension, but actually the quality or characteristic of the earth element is hardness or softness. That is the characteristic of element of earth. So when talking about material properties and when we say element of earth, we mean that, not the solid, not only the solid earth, but the quality of earth. The same with the element of water. So element of water means the quality inherent in water. Water is the characteristic of trickling down, something like that. So the cohesiveness is taken to be the characteristic of element of water. So when we say element of water, we mean this cohesiveness or this trickling characteristic, not the substance we call water, although that is included in the element of water. And the element of fire means just heat or cold or temperature. So temperature is what we mean by element of fire. And the element of air is motion, or according to the explanations given in the commentaries, it is the distendedness. Air has the characteristic of distendedness. That means when you blow into a balloon and it becomes distended, and the air in the balloon keeps the balloon that way. So that distendedness is what we call the element of air. Now, it is said that all these four elements are found everywhere. Although, according to their characteristic, they are distinct, but they are found everywhere. They are together everywhere. So, when you pick up a lump of earth, you can get all four elements in it, because there is hardness or softness in the earth, and then there is cohesiveness in the particles of earth put together, held together, and there is temperature, either cold or hot, and also there is this distendedness. So these four elements can be found everywhere. The same with in the water. So you pick up a water, and in the water we find these four elements. And in the air also, in the fire also, we find these four elements. That is why the element of earth and so on do not mean just the substance which we call, or which is popularly known as earth, water, fire, and air, but the qualities inherent in these four things. They are called primary or essentials, because without these four, there can be no other material properties. The next group consists of 24, and they are dependent on the primary elements, so they are called dependent ones. The Pali word for the dependent one is upada rupa, U-P-A-D-A, upada rupa. Upada means depending on. It is mostly translated as derived material properties. But I think that is not accurate, because these 24 material properties are not derived from the four great essentials, but they depend on the four great essentials. So they are dependent on four great essentials, but not derived from the four. So it is more correct to call them dependent ones than derived properties or derived ones. And there are 24 of them. And we can learn them in some groups. So the first group consists of five. And that these five are eye sensitivity, ear sensitivity, nose sensitivity, tongue sensitivity, and body sensitivity. Now, eye sensitivity means a sensitive part in the eye, not the whole eyeball, but a place where the image strikes and then makes us see. So it may be, according to medical science, it may be the retina of the eye. So that part, which is sensitive to the visible object, is called eye sensitivity. Although the Pali word is just the eye, we must understand here as the sensitive part in the eye, and not the whole of the the eye, or not the whole eyeball. Ear sensitivity, that is, that exists in the inner ear, something like maybe eardrum. You call it eardrum? Yeah, where the sound strikes and then send messages to the brain. And nose sensitivity, that is some kind of material property in the nose by which we experience smell. And tongue sensitivity, they are taste buds in the tongue. And body sensitivity, it is the whole body. So body sensitivity exists in the whole of the body. And these five are what are known as senses. So when we say five senses, we mean these eye, ear, nose, tongue, and body, or sensitive parts in the eye, ear, nose, tongue, and body. Now, body sensitivity exists everywhere in the body, like liquid that soaks a layer of cotton. So if you put a cotton in water, then it soaks, the water is all soaked up. So like that, the body sensitivity exists on the whole of the body, except at the tips of the nails, or tips of the hairs, or on the dry skin, where you do not have any sensation. So these five are called the senses. And the next group is the objects corresponding to these five senses. The first is form. Form here means the color of visible object. Not even the shape, because strictly speaking, what we see is not the shape, but the visible object, visible datum. So it is, let us just call color. So form or color, and sound, that is audible object, sound, noise, and odor or odorous object, smell, taste, sapid object, sweet or sour or whatever. And last one is tangibility, tactile object, that which can be touched. There is no number for this tangibility. And I put an asterisk there. So these are those experienced by or experienced through the senses. It's on the sheet. So you experience visible object through eye sensitivity, audible object or sound through ear sensitivity, and so on. Tangibility, or that which can be touched, is the combination of three primary elements. So the three primary elements of earth, fire, and air combined together are what is called tangible objects or tangibility, an object which can be touched. That's why it has no number, because there are 28 material properties, and if we put the number here, we'll get 29, and it will create confusion. So now, according to Abhidhamma, element of water cannot be touched. Element of water is cohesion, the tricklingness of water, and it is supposed to be untouchable. That is why it is excluded from the tangibility or tactile object. You put your hand in the water and you think you touch the water, but you touch the element of water. But actually, what you touch is not the element of water, but the element of earth, fire, and air existing in the water. So that cohesiveness cannot be touched. So it is excluded. These are the five. These five are called objects or objective fields for the five senses. Next two are femininity and masculinity. Femininity means femaleness, equality that makes known that it is a female. And masculinity is maleness, equality that makes known that it is male. We know that a person is a female or a male by something. And that makes a person male or female is called femininity or masculinity here. Now, there is difference between men and women, or female and male. And the femininity or masculinity creates some aspects or some things by which we know that a particular person or being is a female or a male. And those are said to be first shape. Now the shape of the hands, the shape of the feet, the shape of the neck and so on is different in female from those in male. That is why even if you don't look at the whole person, you can just tell whether it is a male or female by looking at the hand or just by looking at the foot or some other part of the body. So that is the shape which is created or caused by this maleness or femaleness. And the next one is called the mark. That means men is more hairy than women. Men have mustaches on their face and women do not have. And that having mustache and not having mustache is the mark that is caused by this maleness or femaleness in beings. And then action. Action here means boys and girls don't play the same way, especially in the olden days. So because the difference between boys and girls are now disappearing, especially in the West. So in the olden days, girls would play with dolls and then pots and pans and cooking and all some of these things, and boys would play as fighting or plowing or some other thing. So from the way they play, we can say this is a female or this is a male. And then the last one is deportment, that is guide. The way women walk, the way women sit, stand, and do things is different from the way men do. So even though you cannot see the person clearly, just by looking at the way a person walks, you can say this is a man or this is a woman. So these are the things that makes a person known as a male or female. And the maleness or femaleness that causes these things is called here femininity and masculinity. And these two properties exist in the whole of the body. So these masculinity and femininity exist all over the body, like the body sensitivity. And they first arise at birth or relinking. Now, by birth, I mean the birth of those who are called spontaneous, who are said to have spontaneous birth, like devas and life ghosts. Devas and ghosts do not have to be in the mother's womb for 10 months or whatever. So when they are reborn as fully developed persons. So they are called spontaneous beings. So for them, masculinity or femininity arise at birth. But for others, like human beings, they arise at the moment of conception, or at the moment of relinking. I think it is the same with modern medical science. Although the sex of a, what do you call that, fetus, right? The sex of a fetus is not known until maybe 5 weeks, 6 weeks later, but the sex is determined at the moment of conception. So in the same way, maleness or femaleness or femininity or masculinity arises at the moment of conception, at the moment of relinking. Although at that moment, nobody can say whether it will become a boy or a girl. Now, the next one, the heart base. This is problematic. Heart base. And by heart base, we do not mean the muscular heart, but something that exists depending on the blood in the cavity of the heart. So there is blood in the heart, and this heart base depends upon that blood. It is explained this way in the commentaries, in the ancient commentaries. So the heart itself is not the heart base, but something existing in the heart, depending on the blood, is called the heart base. Now, there are two problems with the heart base. The first problem is whether it is really mentioned by the Buddha. And the second problem is whether it is the seat of consciousness. So we have two problems here. Now, the heart base, or the Pali word Hadaya Vattu, Hadaya, Hadaya, and Vattu, Vattu, Hadaya Vattu. Now, the heart base was not mentioned in the chapter on Rupa in the first book of Abhidhamma, where the material properties are treated. It is very strange, because in the first book, all consciousness, all types of consciousness are mentioned, and the Chetasikas are also mentioned. And when it comes to mentioning material properties, the heart base is missing. We do not find heart base in the first book of Abhidhamma. It's very strange. And it was because the commentators took great pains to explain to us why heart base was not mentioned in the first book of Abhidhamma, where all material properties must have been described and must have been given. And the omission of heart base in the first book of Abhidhamma was necessitated by the style of presentation. When Buddha described material properties he described in ones, twos, threes, and so on. So when he described in twos, then the style of presentation must be consistent with other other presentations. Like if there are six pairs in this group, then there must be six pairs in another group, and so on. It may be a little difficult to understand because I'll have to show you the text and then find out that if the heartbeats were to be mentioned there, then it would break the uniformity of presentation. And that is what Buddha did not want to do, because the primary purpose of Buddha in teaching is for the listeners to understand and get enlightenment. And if the style of presentation were disturbed, then it would not help them to understand, and so they would be deprived of the chance to get enlightened. So let us say, on purpose, heartbeat was omitted or left out from the list of material properties mentioned in the first book of Abhidhamma. Then, if it is not mentioned there, is it mentioned somewhere else? Even in other books, the heart base is not mentioned by its name. In the last book of Abhidhamma, Buddha said that depending on a certain material property, the mind element and mind consciousness element arise. Now, Buddha just say depending on a certain material property. Buddha did not say depending on heart base, but he just said depending on a certain material property. And the commentators had us believe that, or they tried to explain to us that what Buddha meant was the heart base, although the word heart base was not used by the Buddha. So it was implied there. And they explained by a method called the method of elimination. That means, say Buddha said isadin rupa. Now, that isadin rupa cannot be the four primary elements, cannot be the eye, the ear, cannot be the visible object, and so on. So they eliminate one after the other until there was nothing left except the heart base. So it must be the heart base Buddha meant when he said depending on a certain material property, mind element and mind consciousness element arise. So it is maybe problematic. So it is arbitrary here that the commentator said it must be the heart base and nothing else. Now that is one problem. So we may say that Buddha did not mention the heart base by name, and so it may not be the heart base which the Buddha meant. We can argue against that, and we will not come to a definite conclusion, but we can still argue. So, although, according to the commentaries, although heart base was not mentioned in the first book of Abhidhamma, it was implied in the seventh book of Abhidhamma when the Buddha said, depending on a certain material property, mind element and mind consciousness element arise. Now, the other problem is, it is really the seat of consciousness. I do not know. According to the traditional traditional belief, many types of consciousness we learned in previous lectures depend upon this heart base for their arising. Without this heart base, they would not have arisen. For example, when you see something, there is a seeing consciousness. Seeing consciousness depends on the eye or eye sensitivity for its arising. But the other types of consciousness, like receiving, investigation, and so on, needs another kind of basis. And the basis for these other types of consciousness is the heart base. So the heart, or something which exists in the heart, is taken to be the seat of consciousness. So according to Abhidhamma, the seat of there are six kinds of seats of consciousness: eye sensitivity, ear sensitivity, nose sensitivity, tongue sensitivity, body sensitivity, and heart base. So many types of consciousness depend on heart base for their arising. But now, science says that consciousness depends upon the brain. So we think or we know things with the help of the brain, and so brain is supposed to be the seat of consciousness.
Pardon? The brain doesn't work.
I see. So there is connection between these two. Yeah. And also, the ancient teachers explained that when you are angry or when you are afraid, your heart beat faster. And that means that the seat of consciousness is there in the heart rather than in the brain or something like that. So,
also in medical thinking, there's a place in the heart called the pacemaker. It's a natural, and they don't know if it's tissue or, but it's the place where they theorize that life begins. It's
no.
Not, it might be energy or it might be the tissue. They don't even know what kind of plastic on it.
Mm-hmm. So, taking. Heart as a seat of consciousness is not altogether against modern science. And I read in one book that modern science yet don't know that the brain is really the seat of consciousness. The more they know about the brain, the more they don't know. Okay. So let us leave this there. I just want to know that, say, heart base is accepted as one of the material properties in Abhidhamma, especially by the teachers of old, and also heart base is taken to be the seat of some types of consciousness. The next one is life faculty, or material life. We met one life faculty among the 52 Chetasikas, and that is mental life faculty. That is life faculty for Chetasikas. And this life faculty, sometimes they translate it as vital principle. This vitality is for material properties. So there are two kinds of life faculty, one mental and the other physical. this does not exist outside living beings. That is, according to Abhidhamma, this material life does not exist outside living beings. Only in living beings it exists. So there is no life in trees, plants, etc., according to Buddhism. Or at least there is no, the Pali word is jivita, J-I-V-I-T-A. So there is no jivita in trees, plants, mountains and others. This is according to Abhidhamma. Now, there is one thing to understand about this life faculty. This life faculty is the one that maintains or that keeps other material properties going as long as they last. Now, material properties last for 17 thought moments. So, after 17 thought moments, they must disappear. Nobody can make them last longer than 17 thought moments. But until the 17 thought moment, they could exist because the life faculty, this life principle, maintains them or supports them or keeps them going. So the material properties need life faculty for their existence. Now, the question is, if life faculty, which is one of the material properties, maintains or supports or keeps the other material properties going, then what keeps it going? What maintains it? What maintains life faculty? The answer is on the next sheet regarding life faculty. The answer is it maintains itself along with other material properties, like a boatman. So when a boatman takes other people to the other shore, he takes himself also. In the same way, when life faculty arises and maintains others, it maintains itself too. So this is the analogy of the boatman. And I give it all here to show, to let you know that it is very difficult to get a satisfactory translation very often. Now, the first sentence is a Pali sentence found in the Attasalini. That is the commentary to Abhidhamma and also in Visuddhimagga. And the first translation is the worst. Life goes on only by being bound up with these states that have gone on, as the pilot on the boat. I don't think you will understand this. The second one is better. And it occurs itself only through its connection with the states that occur, like a pilot. In this translation, what I cannot agree with is the word occur. So, the next one is mine. And it exists itself only through its connection with the states that it maintains, like a pilot on the boat. Still better is, and itself exists only through its connection with the states that it maintains, like a pilot on the boat. So the meaning is that it maintains itself along with maintaining others, like a boatman. And it should not be understood that the maintenance or the keeping keeping the material properties going is reciprocal. In the manual, it is in the manual in chapter 2 when explaining the life, mental life faculty, on page 88, the author, the Venerable Narada, has made a mistake. He said, just as a boatman depends on the boat, and the boat depends on the boatman, even so, Jivitendriya depends on mind and matter, and mind and matter depend on Jivitendriya. But that is not the meaning of the explanation given in the commentary. Not that life faculty depends on the others and others depend on life faculty. But the real meaning is that the function of life faculty is to maintain others. But by maintaining others, it maintains itself. So it is a little different. Not that the maintaining is reciprocal, but just that by something like by protecting others, you protect yourself. So this is a life faculty. The function of life faculty is to maintain others, but by maintaining others, it maintains itself. So it is a little different. Not that the maintaining is reciprocal, but just that by something like by protecting others, you protect yourself. So this is a life faculty. The next one is food or nutrition. Food means a nutritive essence. We find in actually everything, because this material property is said to exist everywhere. Next one is element of space. That means space between groups of material properties. Now, material properties will be grouped together, like people. So, we have thought processes. So, we understand the consciousness as arising in thought processes. So, in the same way, the material properties also arise in groups. And between one group and the other, there is a space. And that is called space, of element of space here. Not the space outside, but the space between groups of material properties. Like when you put the balls together, there is space between them. So something like that. That space is what is called element of space. So there is space everywhere, even in what seem to be solid, there is space. And so we can say that there is space in the walls, in the brick walls, or in whatever things that are solid. And modern nuclear science also supports this. Because material property or atom is nothing but energies spinning, moving around, and there is more space than energy or substance. Yeah, and I read in a magazine that if all the space were taken out of the earth, If we could take all space out of this earth, the earth would be just as big as a golf ball, although it may be very, very heavy. So there is more space than, let's say, substance in the world. The next one is bodily intimation, and the next, verbal intimation. Now, bodily intimation is certain disposition of the body by which one's intention is made known. Now, it is a certain disposition of the body, that means a certain condition of the element in the body by which we make our intentions known, or by which we know the intention of other people. That means we often gesture. So when we want to tell someone to come to us, we make this gesture, right? So the other person sees this gesture and knows that I want him to come to me. So there's something, a certain disposition or some condition of the material element in the moving, in my moving hand, is what is called bodily intimation. Not the body itself, or not the movement itself is bodily intimation, but some mode of material properties arising here, arising in the hand, that is called bodily intimation. Before we make gestures or movement, we have the intention, we have the mind to move. And because of that intention or because of that chaita, there arises some material properties. And since there are billions of thought moments in a second, there can be billions of these small material properties or particles. And so, one by one, they arise and create creates the impression that there is movement. And after seeing the movement, the other person knows the intention. So that certain kind of disposition of the body, or of the, especially of the element, is what is called bodily intimation. And then verbal intimation is a certain mode or condition of earth element in articulating the words of speech. So when we want to say something, there is the intention or there is the mind to say something, and then we use the vocal cords to produce sound. And so in the vocal cords there is the earth element. And this earth element is prominent at the time of speaking. So that a certain mode or condition of the earth element in the vocal cords when we articulate words is what is called verbal intimation. So not the voice itself is verbal intimation, but the something that comes with the voice, or that causes the voice, and that is the verbal intimation. Popularly, we may say that the bodily gesture is bodily intimation, and the words we say are verbal intimation. But in an exact way, bodily intimation is something which we cannot see, but we can guess. And also verbal intimation we cannot see. So these two are not visible to the eye, but known through the mind. I often wonder whether there can be intimation in traffic lights. According to the teachings of Abhidhamma, these two kinds of intimation do not arise outside living beings. But there is some kind of intimation in the lights. Say you're driving and the car in front flashes a light, and you know that it's changing lanes, or it's going to stop or whatever. So that's something like intimation, bodily intimation. We may say that it is not real bodily intimation, but some material properties caused by the bodily intimation of a human being. So it is a outcome of the bodily intimation. So only not every movement is bodily intimation, because even you may move when you are asleep, and your movements, and nobody will know your intention, because there is no intention at all. So not every movement, even of the living being, living beings, is bodily intimation, but that by which we know the intention is what is called bodily intimation, and verbal intimation are mostly the words. So these two are called bodily intimation, and they are said to exist only for one thought moment and not 17 thought moments. The next three are material lightness, material softness, and material adaptability. We find these, or similar to these, among the Chetasikas. Lightness of Namakaya, lightness of Cheta, and so on. So here also material lightness in matter, softness in matter, and adaptability in matter. When we are healthy, we feel lightness, or we feel softness and adaptability in our bodies. And when we are sick, or when we are tired or whatever, then they may disappear. So these are these three, together with numbers 20 and 21, are called alteration matter, or vikara rupa. I wanted to use altered state, but it may mean some other thing. Altered states of matter. So alteration matter is some kind of special kind of matter. Then the last four, first arising and growth of matter, upacaya, continuity of matter, santati, aging of matter, jarada, and impermanence of matter, or death of matter, anicca. These are the last four. The first arising and growth of matter, continuity of matter, and then aging of matter, and then disappearance of matter. These four. These, actually, among these four, number 25 and 26 are the terms for matter at arising stage. Now, there are three stages in existence: the arising, staying, and disappearing. Three stages. The first stage here is divided into two, number 25 and 26. First arising, or growth, and then continuity of matter. Now, the first, only the one stage is described as two here. That is because of the difference of mode, or according to the listeners to be taught. That means to suit the susceptibility to instruction. That means you have to take into account the listeners. Some listeners are accustomed to looking at the arising moment as two stages, and some look at it as only one stage. So for those who are accustomed to looking at the arising stage as comprising of two stages, this kind of teaching is given. So according to the listeners, to be taught means according to suit their susceptibility to instruction. This is most common in the suttas. But even in Abhidhamma, Buddha had to take into account the susceptibility of the listeners, or the likes and dislikes of listeners, because the purpose of his teachings is to make beings gain enlightenment. And if their understanding is disturbed, then they may not get enlightenment. So it is important even in Abhidhamma, it is important to be sensitive to the needs of the listeners. And these four are called matter of mark or sign, because actually they are not real material properties, but the different stages of the material properties: the arising stage, aging stage, and disappearing stage. So altogether, there are these 28 types of material properties, and everything in the world, including living beings, is composed of a number of these material properties. Now, we'll study the causes for arising of matter. What causes matter to arise? What is the cause of matter? In Abhidhamma, causes are said to be four. One is karma. So there are material properties caused by karma. The second is consciousness, citta. There are material properties caused by citta. And the third, climatic conditions. It is called utu. That means climate or temperature, or heat or cold. And the fourth one is nutrition, or the nutritive essence existing in all things. So these are the four causes of matter. Now let us see which material property is caused by which. Now you have this page, right?
Last page,
yes. Now, earth element is caused by what? Caused by all four causes. Now, K means karma, C means consciousness, CL means climatic conditions, and N means nutrition. So the four elements are caused by all four causes. But eye sensitivity is caused by karma only, ear, nose, tongue, body. And form is caused by four. But sound is caused by only two, consciousness and climatic conditions. Odor, taste, tangibility, they are caused by all four. Femininity and masculinity are caused by karma only. So according to karma, we are reborn as man or a woman. And heartbeat, karma, by karma only. Life faculty, by karma only. Nutrition, by all four. Element of space, by all four. Actually, element of space is not caused by anything. But since it is the space between... So the bodily intimation and verbal intimation are caused by consciousness only. And material lightness, softness, adaptability caused by three, except karma. And the last four are caused by none, because they are, as I said, not the real material properties, but just the different stages in the existence of material properties. So when we read them down, we get 18 caused by karma, 15 caused by consciousness, 13 caused by climatic conditions, and 12 caused by nutrition. And you see the plus signs and minus signs. So plus signs mean that these are inseparable. There are eight material properties that cannot be separated physically. You can say that this is earth element, the element of earth, this is element of water, and so on. But you cannot physically separate these elements. So they are called inseparables, and they are said to be eight. So according to Abhidhamma, even in the smallest particle of matter, there are these eight material properties. They are the four great elements, and color, odor, taste, and nutrition. So these eight are always with anything we call matter.
Is it space also?
Space is outside these eight. Yeah, because space comes when we have different groups of matter. And the minor signs are those that can be deficient in some beings. Some may be born without the eye sensitivity, those who are born blind. Some may be born without ear sensitivity and so on. And what about body? Here, body means body sensitivity, not the body itself. Now, it is said that the Brahmas have no, Brahmas do not have three sensitivities, nose, tongue, and body. Although they have the physical nose, tongue, and body, they do not have sensitivities in these material properties. So, for some beings, even body sensitivity can be deficient. Brahmas are those who want to keep only eye sensitivity and ear sensitivity, because eye sensitivity is useful in seeing the Buddha, and ear sensitivity is useful in listening to his teachings. But nose, tongue, and body are useless for them. They do not want to have any use of these. So they try to meditation so that as a result of their meditation, or as a result of the jhanas they attain, they are reborn without these sensitivities. So they can be deficient. And femininity and masculinity can also be deficient, because some, I don't know whether such beings exist nowadays, those who are neither men nor women. Neuter persons. I don't know. Sexless persons.
That they have both sexes or neither. What is androgynous?
Both. No. This is neither. No. They. Oh no, they're human beings. In among human beings, there can be some who are born without femininity or masculinity. They are called in. Yeah, neuter persons. And according to Abhidhamma, no being can have both femininity and masculinity. So there can be no true hermaphrodite, according to the teachings of Abhidhamma. They may have masculinity at some time and femininity at another time, but not at the same moment, not both at the same moment. I don't know whether that is really true. Because it is difficult to say whether femininity or masculinity is existing in a person, because it is not the organs that distinguish men from women or women from men, but that maleness or femaleness in a person. So both maleness and femaleness cannot exist at the same time in a person. That is according to the teaching of Abhidhamma.
The key is at the same time.
Right, yes. So they can be deficient. And maybe there are some beings, not human beings, smaller forms of life that have no femininity or masculinity. Not in human beings only. Now, yeah, that's right.
But those cells they're cells, they must be dependent on nutrition.
Yes, but they are born of karma. And then after being born, they are supported by other material properties. That's right, yes. Yeah, that's right. Their first arising is due to karma. Not necessarily desire, but desire is always with beings who are reborn again and again. But the karma accompanying desire or the kusala cheta, because there is kusala karma and also akusala karma, and they cause the sensitivities to arise. So they are said to be the sensitivities are said to be born of karma.
Excuse me. I would like to ask you, what is kusala and akusala?
Oh, wholesome and unwholesome. Kusala is wholesome, moral, or akusala is unwholesome, or immoral. Yeah, all four. Yes.
But those specific parts, those sensitivities, that all is driven by.
But yeah, that's right. Yes, they arise as a result of karma. But when they arise with other material properties that are caused by citta and others. So they are supported by each other and also by life faculty. But they themselves are the results of karma.
And why is sound different
from
sound?
Sound is not included in the inseparables, because there is no sound there. Only when you touch it or when you tap on it, is there sound. The sound arises only where there's the impact of something.
It is vibration.
The sound that is audible to the eye. I mean, to the ear. And sound is sometimes caused by citta when we speak, and then caused by outside things we call climatic conditions, like when one rock hits against the another rock. So sound is different from form, odor, and others. Now, you have to go farther a little. Possibility of healing by one's mind. Now, we have studied that mind or consciousness can cause material properties to arise, or some material properties are caused by mind. So when the mind is good, when the mind is relaxed, when the mind is concentrated, it will produce good material properties. And when it is in a bad state, like when we are angry or when we are depressed, then the material properties it produces will be bad ones. So there is the possibility of healing by one's mind. Now, disease is nothing but bad material properties, bad matter in our body, and that we call disease. So by having a good mind, relaxed, concentrated, and happy, and positive thinking mind, we can produce material properties that are good, and that will attack these disease material properties. And that is why there can be healing by one's mind. Not every time you have a disease, you cannot heal with your mind only. But at times, there can be healing by one's mind.
Did you say relaxed, positive, and what other?
Yeah, concentration also.
Concentrated?
Yeah. That is why it is important to to keep our minds cheerful and not depressed when we are sick or when we have disease. And the doctor say that good emotions produce good hormones and bad emotions produce bad hormones. So good emotions or bad emotions are just mind, and hormones are material properties. So by keeping one's mind happy, relaxed, concentrated and clear, one can produce good material properties that will attack the disease material properties. That is one way of explaining healing by one's mind.
Healing to oneself or to others?
Oneself. Healing oneself.
That
yeah.
Doesn't apply to healing others, this attribute?
Not to others.
Not to others.
And the power of mind to support the body, for example, during sustained attainment of jhana and fruition. Now, there is the attainment, we call sustained attainment of jhana and sustained attainment of fruition. That means you enter into the jhana and only jhana thought movements arise for, say, 1 hour, 2 hours, 1 day, 2 days. And the same with fruition attainment. Fruition attainment means first you get enlightenment, and next, and after that, you enter into that state of enlightenment again, but at that time only the fruition thoughts, fruition consciousness arise successively without interruption for hours or for days. Now, it is said that especially the jhana thought, jhana consciousness can support the body. That is why during the sustained attainment, people can remain in a sitting position for 7 days without eating, without sleeping, without drinking. So the consciousness, when developed to the state of jhana, can keep the physical body in a good shape. And Buddha once said that he could enter into the fruition attainment and live a long, long time, or maybe live forever. But that is impossible, because the physical body cannot last, say, for a very long period of time. But Sometimes when Buddha had an illness, Buddha suppressed that illness, I mean that painful feelings in his body by entering into the fruition attainment. When it was about 10 months before his death, he got sick. And it is stated in the books that it was a very severe sickness. And Buddha, endure that sickness or suppress the painful feelings by entering into this kind of fruition attainment. And after before entering into that fruition attainment, he practiced vipassana as though he were practicing it as a beginner, a new meditation. So he practiced, and then just before entering into the fruition attainment, he made a resolution in his mind, like, may these painful feelings not arise for 10 months, because at the end of 10 months he was going to die. So he stopped, or he suppressed the painful feelings by the power of very concentrated mind, or by the power of the fruition attainment, and was able to suppress these feelings for the remaining period of time, for the remaining period of 10 months. So the mind can support the body. Mind can keep the body in good shape. Even if you do not, or if you cannot enter into jhanas or fruition, if you have a good concentration, then you can keep your body in a pretty good shape. Many meditators, when they reach higher stages of vipassana meditation, found that they could remain in a sitting position for 2-3 hours without ill effects. Some people even even give up sleeping for 2 or 3 days. They don't sleep at all. But even though they don't sleep at all, they do not feel weak, or they do not feel any bad effects from keeping awake all the time. So it happens to most vipassana practitioners when they reach the higher stages, because when they reach the higher stages, their concentration is very good and their minds are very still, and so they can keep their body in good shape. You may have seen people who could sit for hours without moving or without doing anything at all. Just like a statue. People sit there for 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours sometimes. And after breaking that position, they do not feel any pain or anything, any bad effects. So the concentrated mind can keep our body in shape. And that is something like mind over matter. Okay. Any question?
I would like to ask you to please clarify this term, fruition attainment. Does it mean samadhi or nirvana or a superconscious state? What does it mean?
It belongs to supramundane types of consciousness.
Does it mean samadhi?
No. This belongs to Panya, wisdom group. The fruition immediately follows the path. There are two kinds of consciousness, path consciousness and fruition consciousness. Path consciousness arises at the moment of enlightenment, and immediately two or three moments of fruition follow. So, fruition consciousness is fruition consciousness belongs to enlightenment, or it is part of the enlightenment consciousness. So, at the first attainment of enlightenment, the path consciousness arises, and then followed by two or three moments of fruition. Later on, when the person wants to experience the same thing, they practice meditation, and at that time, path consciousness does not arise, but only the fruition consciousness arises. And the arising of fruition consciousness may be for hours or for days.
This is a kind of an ecstasy. In Christian parlance, ecstasy.
It is a kind of
ecstasy.
That
would be.
Yes.
And what is path consciousness?
It is also the enlightenment consciousness.
Path is enlightenment.
Yeah, path and fruition both.
They're the same.
Not the same, but both of them belong to enlightenment.
When you say path consciousness, has that something to do with the Eightfold Path? Is it connected with you're on the Eightfold Path?
It is the same word as for Eightfold Path,
yes.
Magga.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Could you come from
chapter 22? I was having a question about the prior. In the thought process, there's 17 thought moments, and in the Jivana period, it's when karma can be. Can resolve. I mean, this may be a misunderstanding on my part, but it seems like with the kinds of consciousness that can arise, that kusala and kusala would be, you would find in that period, because that's when karma can be generated and there. And the rootless consciousness would be in the area of the first eight part. Could be in there. But where do the resultant savanna consciousnesses arise in that thought process?
You see the two moments following the javanas?
Yes.
Yeah. Those two moments are represented by the sobhana resultant consciousness, and also by investigating. We will come to that maybe in the next talk. Yeah.
Could this path consciousness be something like cosmic consciousness? Like cosmic consciousness?
No. That consciousness that arises in any person. Not consciousness belonging to all people or all beings, or not the universal consciousness, because in Theravada Buddhism, consciousness is something like individual, so there is no such thing as universal consciousness or universal Atman like in Hinduism, but each being has its own consciousness.
And in Theravada Buddhism, don't they have a type of consciousness where the person feels at one moment with everything a flash of a consciousness where the person feels at one with every being, with everything, in fact, a plant or an object. Is there such a state of consciousness?
No.
In Theravada, they talk only about the ecstatic consciousness.
Yes. Yes. Not only about ecstatic consciousness. They talk about different kinds of consciousness, and some of the types of consciousness could be called ecstatic types, like jhana consciousness and fruition consciousness.
Okay. Thank you.